The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
World Cup Football Daily and a Teuton bomb. Remember, they're called Brazilians because the Germans tore several strips off them, exposing all their cracks at the back. We get podcasters on the disaster after Brazil's heaviest World Cup loss since they paid for this one. Then look forward to the other semi-final, Argentina-Netherlands, Messi-Robin, the duel of the dribblers, and it's certainly got our mouths a-watering. All of that coming up in today's World Cup Football Daily. Very tasteless timing from those German umpar artists again, isn't it? A nation in mourning, and there they are, umping and parring. Barry Glendenning's here, witness to history.
Hello.
Greg Bukowski.
Hi,
likewise.
James.
James Horncastle.
Hey.
And you, listener, and you, like us, have probably just seen the worst loss by a host team in the history of the World Cup. Wow. Barry, any thoughts? Are you distraught?
I feel sorry for them. I don't think any team deserves a shellacking like that. Maybe Arsenal, who are kind of used to it, because it happens to them so often. But when you're playing for an international team, and particularly a very good international team, to lose like that in a World Cup semi-final in front of your own fans, it must be absolutely horrible. So while it was mildly amusing for a while, I did sort of pity them towards the end. I can't imagine how I would feel if I'd been on the receiving end of a shellacking like that. As a former left back, I imagine I could have possibly done a better job than Marcelo did tonight. So a lot of those players, I suspect, will never play for Brazil again, and they'll never forget what happened to them tonight.
Greg, you've played a bit. Could most teams have done that to that Brazil tonight?
I thought Germany were wonderful. I thought they played unbelievably good football, but the way Brazil defended was just diabolical. I mean, I just thought they got completely found out tonight in terms of them not really having a system. And when players were moving about, you move one direction in the pitch and the whole kind of framework of your team kind of shifts towards that direction. They were going, David Luiz was marching 20 yards forward and player behind him was going 10 yards left, and there was just so much space there for Germany to exploit, and they did it ruthlessly. And Brazil just fell into a chasm. And I, like Barry at the time, I felt like looking away, I was in work, I couldn't really do that, but but it was shocking.
Yeah. I think David Luiz, you give him going into this game as the captain, a player who's very popular in Brazil and a cult figure in these parts, often called a PlayStation player by Gary Neville, and I think that was the case tonight. I think this is the most expensive defender in the history of the game.
Mm. A lot of people tweeting about PSG keeping the receipt.
Well, I mean, I think it showed tonight. I mean, there's so much focus on Neymar. They held his shirt aloft before the game. Yeah, they should have been holding Thiago Silva's shirt. He makes David Luiz look a lot better player, right. Well, defender than he is.
But the shirt business, I mean, not to get all pop psychologists on this, but that was a bit of a worrying sign, wasn't it? Them going out and holding almost like a little bit like the Indians with their ghost shirts when they went into that final. This sacred memento that's maybe going to give them the luck. I know it was a tribute to Neymar, but it just looked a little bit desperate, did it not?
Well, I think in many respects it's a blessing that he wasn't involved in that game tonight. I think it's the same for Thiago Silva, that they can move on and from it, and people's memories of them from this tournament will be strong. If anything, it perhaps might add to the pressure on Neymar's shoulders to kind of relieve this burden, lift this hex, and get rid of this complex, because they are going to have a complex on it. I mean, as Barry touched upon earlier, I think the history, the context, the location, the opponent, yeah, this is supposedly the greatest team, national team in international football, to be destroyed like that.
It was great fun to watch, though, wasn't it? I mean, for a bit. I know it was awkward, that, but it was amazing. It really was amazing when you thought, oh, they could get, and they have got another, not another. It was staggering.
Well,
it was like watching a wino get beaten up by a gang of skateboard punks in
for
the
example,
park or something.
When you get a high-scoring first half, you know they're not going to score in the second half. And if this, most of the latter period, indeed, they don't. But then when they started to score again, it was a bit of a relief that, oh, we're going to get... I had a bit of a taste for goals by that. I wanted more.
And you're usually one who criticises this.
I know. I did. When it got to 3 or 4, I thought, well, they've got to stop now. I think it's a DJ, they've got to stop now.
I did enjoy writing out 7 in brackets on the Guardian Twitter feed like I was controlling the BBC video printer. Very nice moments.
All right.
Well, Martin Keown on the BBC commentary said, probably time Germany were thinking about declaring.
Yeah. Just going back to a quick point James made about Neymar, and and you said about them holding up the shirt and showing the clinging on to him, his memory almost. I just wonder how much that played into Germany's kind of game plan from the start, because not having Neymar in the team and being faced with Fred and a bunch of other players behind him who haven't really impressed at the tournament, I just wonder if that made Germany just feel like they could smell they could smell blood from the beginning, and the way they pounced on Brazil and just didn't let up, the press high up the field was quite something.
Yeah. Do you think, had Thiago Silva and Neymar played, any difference at all?
I'm sure Germany would have still won the game. I think Thiago Silva in that defence would have made a difference.
Right.
And I think had Germany not huffed and puffed and blew the house apart like they did, I think they, perhaps Brazil might have gone on and lost three goals.
The pre-match shirt waving has just been one small example of the amount of pre-match cobblers Brazil have gone on with throughout this tournament. You know, the amount of guff they talk about the national anthem, which is just a song you sing before the game. And then there's all this absolute rubbish they go on about...
Do you not think they've been carried to where they are though in the tournament on this wave of emotion? And if in some ways, without all that, they might have lost sooner than they did. Maybe they lost that penalty shootout to Chile. It could have been a saving grace for them, and they wouldn't have had to to put up with this tonight. But at times, I've thought this Brazil team is getting through on the back of that support and and all that kind of hullabaloo that surrounded them.
I don't know, but this business of players breaking down in tears before the game even bloody starts, I mean, it's just ridiculous. David Luiz has spent the tournament. He's played quite well in games and been their best player at times, but my abiding memory of him in this tournament will either be A, the ball sailing past him once again in this game this evening, or him walking around pointing at the sky for reasons best known to himself.
Well, I don't know. It's like, point at the sky,
it's like Robbie Keane, just
Brazilian
walking around
ever.
Pointing at things.
Which, just out of interest, not to be contrary, but which game has he played really well in and been their best player?
I thought he was very good in their last game.
Really? Okay.
Against Colombia.
It's more than 24 hours ago. I can't remember that. We can't delay it any longer. Let's speak to Raphael Honigstein.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Rafa!
Hey!
Hey!
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very happy.
Okay. So, Germany, Rafa.
Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit speechless, and I think the law of diminishing return kicked in. If it was a nervy 2-1, 3-2... Everyone would be a lot more euphoric, but the game finished so early and finished by such a wide margin that you almost start second-guessing yourself and thinking, did they make it so easy for us? Were they really atrocious? How good were we, actually? I think Löffel used that kind of disbelief to their advantage and say, whoever will come up now in the final will not make life so easy for us. They won't just roll over. So keep your feet on the ground. But looking at the players' reaction, I mean, they're so professional. They're so focused. Oliver Beer said to me the other day that he'd never seen a team who celebrated so little after winning a quarterfinal. Not as a player, not as a general manager. And I think he's been to something like 10 tournaments now. This team are absolutely happy to tick all stereotypical boxes when it comes to being professional, concentrating, trying to get the job done. And I think you saw that maturity today. The big difference for me was that Germany had the maturity to sense that when Brazil were vulnerable after that first goal, they went for the kill. And that's why they killed the game so quickly.
Rafa, I thought it was quite interesting. Oh, congratulations, by the way. But I thought it was quite interesting that even when they let in that late goal, the German defenders, Emmanuel Neuer, were furious with each other, absolutely going crazy that they'd conceded a goal.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect anything else from Neuer. Again, Bierhoff said something amazing. He said, Neuer is the kind of guy who does everything well. He's got game intelligence, and he's an absolutely ambitious and hell-bent on winning anything. And, you know, there were a lot of question marks about this generation of players because they hadn't won the big international trophy. I think the Champions League for Bayern last season helped in that respect. I think Sami Khedira winning the Champions League with Real Madrid has helped. I think Özil winning a trophy and Mertesacker with Arsenal has helped. I think it seems as if they sort of have a momentum and have an inner confidence. And when they didn't really convince with a lot of performances, it was amazing to see that within the team, and that included the staff, they were a lot less despondent and a lot less doubtful than outside. After Ghana, after Algeria, nobody expected Germany to win by this margin. A lot of people didn't expect them to even get this far. Mm. But you can see why I think the confidence that they've had in themselves has been absolutely vindicated tonight.
Raf, have you ever seen a performance like that before? A game like that?
I think it had shades of Bloemfontein, although the first half, of course, was a lot closer and England should have gone in level. I think there was it was a little bit reminiscent of Bayern beating Barcelona in the semi-final. It also was a little bit reminiscent of Real Madrid beating Bayern in this semi-final, the Champions League. I just think that Tim Vickery said something amazing on BBC. He said, when you're not really 100% confident in yourselves, you can maybe sort of make yourself believe you are something that you're not. As soon as that balloon is pricked, then you've got nothing left to fall on. I think that's what happened to Brazil. I think in that moment, when they conceded the first goal, certainly when they conceded the second one, they realized, you know, we don't have it tonight. And they just completely fell apart as a result, which was unnecessary because there was a lot of time to still come back, but they lost their heads completely. And a lot of Bayern players in that Germany team and a few others, Khedira, for example, was absolutely fantastic. They punished them.
Mm. All right, so pricked by the Mannschaft. Who do you want in the final?
Oh, no, James. Never the Mannschaft. Never.
Okay, who do you want in the final?
It's the Nationalmannschaft.
All right, then.
It's not the Mannschaft.
Okay, then. It's your night, Rafa. Final? I'll let you have that. Who do you want in the final?
I really honestly don't know. I mean, after this result, Germany are the favourites. Whoever comes in against them, even Messi with Argentina, will be seen as a huge underdog. I still think that Argentina have a better side with better players and, of course, with Messi. You wouldn't put it past the Dutch to knock them out because Argentina, like every side so far, has shown themselves to be slightly flawed. So I think it will be Argentina and I think it'll be a very different game.
Mm.
I just hope that Germany won't come away from this tournament thinking, you know, we've got this fantastic historic result, beating Brazil in Brazil 7-1, but we again fell short. I think they really now have to go that next step. Otherwise, this result will ultimately be meaningless.
Raphael Honigstein. You're saying about feeling sorry. I felt very sorry for Fred getting booed every time. And then when he was sat on the bench and then his picture comes up on the big screen, the crowd are booing him again. SOS report tweeting, I have to feel sorry for Fred. He's no worse than his limitations compared to Luis, who is a desperate underachiever and a defensive saboteur.
Yeah, I think it's unfair to single anyone out because they were all pretty appalling, apart with the possible exception of Julio Cesar, who wasn't really to blame for much and pulled off a couple of good saves towards the end that could have made things worse had he not. But you would think that Luis Felipe Scolari could go down to the Copacabana, throw a stick at any time of the day and hit somebody who would be better up front than Fred. You hear so much about how great Brazilians are at football. And then you look at the team, and it's Fred, Hulk, and what's his name?
Joe.
Yeah, they're their strikers.
Well, that's because the other fella left for Spain. That wasn't Scolari's fault.
And he did so much at this World Cup as well.
Yeah.
But I thought... It was quite interesting. Germany seemed to have adopted this new tactic of being a foosball table. They go from side to side, let the ball do most of the work.
Which is what Brazil did exactly the opposite of. They just let everybody do the work and run after lost.
They were like a Brownian motion experiment.
Yeah.
It feels bad criticising them. It's like, you know, stealing the pennies from a dead man's eyes.
Right. Okay. Now, we've heard from Rafael Honigstein. It's only fair that we check up on Fernando Duarte, author of Shocking Brazil, a catalogue of Brazil's worst performances ever, and thus a man uniquely placed to discuss this game.
Hello, James.
Hello. Fernando, what just happened?
I don't know, man. I think a massive Mercedes-Benz truck just ran over the Brazilian national team, and it didn't have time to note down, you know, to write down the license number, the license plate.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
In all seriousness,
yeah.
Big mistake since the start, like trying to deploy an attacking formation against Germany, trying to speed up play against one of the fastest teams in the tournament. A soft goal conceded in the corner. Horrendous marking, and Thomas Müller is a poacher. He's a shark. Mm-hmm. He kind of like swims silently in the box. He scored, and then we lost. We lost everything after that. The team was pretty much destroyed.
Right.
By a very, 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 very superior opponent. They take nothing from the German side. Brazil were, you know, destroyed by Germany today, and that's pretty much what happened. And is it shocking? Yeah. Is it absolutely groundbreaking? Yeah. Is this going to throw Brazilian football into the ring? Yeah, and starts now.
Yeah.
Huge autopsy.
What happens in the next few days then before the third, fourth playoff? For Brazil?
Well, first of all, they're going to have to explain a lot of stuff. They're going to have to explain how they crumbled, what went wrong. But above all, I don't think you should get hung up with this match. It's gone now. The thing is, what do you do so that in 2018 you can actually mount a proper challenge? Because don't get me wrong, this is not an impossible result in terms of perhaps the score, totally weird, but losing to Germany, in my opinion, was the most common result that could happen here. This shows that at the very top of things, Brazilian football has got serious problems. The national team, it in itself, cannot be independent from the structure of the game. The national team is the sum of everything that's happened in the game. At every point, from grassroots, from organization, from marketing. And that result shows that there's something really, really wrong. Today, we witnessed the death of Brazilian football as we know it. It's simple. Simple as that. I didn't expect it to come this way, but I didn't. But I'm not surprised that it would come eventually.
Listen, there was a lot of criticism, Fernando, about the amount of emotion and the amount of pressure that the players seem to be feeling in previous matches, the tears and other things. And in that context, what's the reaction going to be to the way they began the game? Lifting aloft Neymar's shirt. Will it be seen as a display of mental weakness?
The only way Brazil could escape from being vilified with a defeat here, these players, was by losing dignity. Today they didn't. The crowd was amazing until the point that they couldn't take it anymore. You know, they booed the team off the pitch. think David Luiz was one of the few players that actually got anything not like a nice salute. But they got a bit to blame. I think Scolari is the biggest culprit, of course, but they just played. They just witnessed the worst defeat in Brazilian football ever. The worst defeat. And these guys are going to be marked forever for that.
Mm.
If they should be vilified or hung up to dry like in 1950, it's another story. I don't think they should. But they're never going to be able to get rid of that. They'll be marked forever.
Do you think that some of them are never going to play for Brazil again?
Well, of course, in terms of age, some will never do that. I think Dani Alves, Mike, and Cesar probably, you know, but because of age. Well, not always lost. There are some players that we can try to build up a team for 2018, but this is not the problem. The players is not the only thing you can do. The game needs to be changed because at every level, there are shortcomings. There are shortcomings in the way we don't have a centre forward, for example. There's something fundamentally wrong. I would love to know the answer because then I would sell it to somebody. They could try to work with consultants or something like that. Mm. But there's something fundamentally wrong that we need to address in this game.
Fernando,
that's what Silva told me.
No, I was just going to say, you sound really composed. But what were you feeling when the goals... I mean, that period of 3 minutes when the game just collapsed around you, what was that like?
Even before the first goal, in a sense, we're playing in the wrong way. Why are we doing this? Why are we trying to speed up play against these guys? They're going to score pretty soon. And I was talking to a colleague, and then, boom, the first goal went in. Poor Mark, they just said, oh, for goodness sake, seriously, we let this one in? I started getting angry, but all of a sudden, in 25 minutes, I think we were already 3-0, 4-0 down, and I just said, all right, I'm not going to get angry. Because you know what? This might actually do something positive. Finally, some of the idiots, some of the absolutely assholes, the rumbles in the football, might actually take some kind of lesson from that. Because things cannot stay this way anymore. It's been proved today that we've been hiding behind our success for too long. The world caught up. The other nations caught up. This has been a fantastic World Cup. And Brazil has been humbled. To be honest, this has come... We would do a pitching like that. It's a shame that it happened in Brazil. Well, I see an opportunity. All things must pass. There is something we can actually use this for. I've had to change things. Because otherwise, it's just going to become a middle nation. We're just going to slide down the ranks. This has to be an alert. This has to be something that shows that we need to address serious problems and move on. But maybe for Brazilian football will change for the better.
Oh, okay.
After such a drubbing, after such a horrendous defeat. And let us be humble. Let us learn instead of just thinking that we're the best, because today it's been proved we're not the best anymore.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Yeah, he's quite chipper, Fernando, there.
I'm just glad he wasn't in the studio, because there's a scissors and a penknife on the table and a couple of pens. God knows what might have happened. They're very sharp objects.
Yeah. I think he'd be off burning his guitar in a kind of protest somewhere. A lot of people tweeting about the fact that there wasn't a minute silence for this game, for the death yesterday of Alfredo Di Stéfano.
Well, I did mention in my minute-by-minute report that somewhere up in heaven, I'd like to think that a very good dead Argentinian footballer was sniggering away at the sort of divine intervention and karmic retribution he'd visited upon the Brazilian authorities for not giving him the courtesy of a minute silence.
Although that might well have been FIFA's decision. There's lots of live Argentine footballers are no doubt enjoying tonight's events and thinking that, worst-case scenario, if they lose their semi-final, at least they get to beat up on their neighbours in the third, fourth play.
I guess the only saving grace for Brazil is if Argentina do reach the final and Germany do it to them the way they did tonight.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just picturing Diego Maradona's coffee table right now.
Craig,
can you imagine?
Not sure that I can legally, no. Let's move on then to the other game, Argentina-Netherlands, and certainly they have quite a match to follow. Battle of the Dribblers, I called it, and Robin on one side, Messi on the other. Lots of people posting on our... On the Guardian website about this. Camp as you like. Says, I try to dislike Robin like everyone else, but I can't because he's looking more and more like Rigsby. Even his sly cheating is what Rigsby would have done if he'd been a footballer, so I can't dislike it. And he's also one of the three most effective players in the World Cup, says Camp as you like. Rigsby had a rising damp.
Oh,
no,
right.
Miss Jones, that one.
Does he look like Arjen Robin?
Big bad hair, didn't he?
Some.
And a pair of 70s slacks.
Yeah, but
and
it's
a green cardigan.
It's a kind of archaic TV reference.
And he was a racist.
Was he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, the TV was in those days, no?
Different time.
Different time.
70s television.
You know what? A lot of people also posting on that whole business of Van Gaal changing his keepers before the penalty shootout. Funkerbus says, Ray Hunter saying, everyone's giving too much credit to Van Gaal for this. It was basically done by, excuse the pronunciation, Frans Hoek, Netherlands goalie coach. The way that Van Gaal tapped him, thankfully, on the back of the end of the game, and the way that Krul pointed to him and then to his head shows it undoubtedly. Well, interesting. I don't know if you saw, actually, somebody put together a nice little kind of info pictogram of the fact that Krul, ahead of each penalty, walked to one side and then dived to the other. And it's almost like he was subconsciously sending the penalty taker's kicks that direction. If he walked to the right ahead of the kick, they would invariably shoot to their right, to his left. So he's basically leaving them a big open space.
Keepers do that, though. They leave a bigger gap.
No, but
on
this
one
was
side
this is while he was doing his little pre-game pre-kick walk around. He would walk over to one post, just leaving a lot of space in that direction. And then he'd come back and dive the opposite way. And sure enough,
and he was telling each player the way they were going to kick it as well.
Effectively, he was just giving them a subconscious image of an empty goal of a goalkeeper who was to one side, so that you would probably want to. That other side looked more vulnerable by default. Yeah,
it's all mind games.
It is. That's the thing. I mean, that's what football is. It's up here. I'm pointing to my head.
I was talking to my close personal friend, the Bosnia Herzegovina goalkeeper Asmir Begovic, yesterday, and asking him about this goalkeeper. So I was asking him how annoyed would he be if it had been done to him. And his answer was very annoyed indeed, but, you have to sort of take one for the team sometimes and accept it's for the greater good and get behind you. But the subtext was quite clearly he'd have been furious. And he wasn't particularly impressed with Tim Krul's behaviour before the penalties, but sort of said, there's no rules against it, so that it wouldn't be in his nature to do it, but if Tim Krul wanted to, then fine. It obviously worked.
No, it certainly did. It was quite the tactical coup by Louis van Gaal. What's he going to cook up, though, ahead of this match to deal with, in particular, Lionel Messi? Well, let's dial up Benefoot.net's Mikael Jongsma to get his take. Wow, you guys have got quite the semi-final coming up this evening.
Yeah, we were very, very anxious at reaching the final, but looking at Germany tonight, probably going to be a bit more difficult even than we imagined it would be before. So.
Well, we shall see. In the meantime, you've got this semi-final with Argentina. Robin van Persie's got stomach problems. No De Jong. And you got to sort out this Messi business. What do you think Van Gaal's going to do?
Well, the Nigel de Jong story is a peculiar one because it appeared he was out for the World Cup, but as things stand, there's actually a chance of him appearing tomorrow because his revalidation, his recuperation has been way ahead of schedule and they're doing everything to get him ready for the game. So that would answer your Messi problem question as well.
What, do you just put De Jong on him? If not, you could always just hold his shirt up before the game.
Yeah, that apparently is very effective.
Yeah. De Jong on Messi, he can take care of Messi on his own, can he?
Well, to be honest, I would expect somehow to actually put Wijnaldum on him. Not because Wijnaldum is such a great defender, because he's really fast and quite powerful as well. And he's very disciplined. So my guess beforehand would have been that. If not, I think Van Gaal. He's been quite open about it. He has a plan to actually stop Messi from playing his football. And what that plan is, we'll probably see that tomorrow. On Robin van Persie, it would be a shame for him not to be able to play. It looks like he can play actually, but. If not, we still have Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, who's a very qualified striker, of course, to put in there. And Van Persie really didn't look that amazing the last couple of games. So I think for the Netherlands, even those the problems that are there at the moment, are things that we can overcome.
Mm. And of course, the Argentines have to stop Ian Robin.
Yeah, Robin has been amazing this season, and not only this season. It's quite incredible to see a player just improve and improve, especially in his position. And he's 30 now, and he looks better than ever. He's been very much the inspiration for this side. The younger players have lauded him for his professionalism. Ron Flaher in today's Football International actually said that Arjen Robben has been the inspiration for him to get more fit and be more aware of what he's doing in training, what he's eating. So Robben is really the inspiration to this side, and I can't imagine the Argentines not being worried about the impact that he can have on this game.
Mm. Who's going to be in goal?
Sillesen.
Right, okay.
His status has been confirmed. Krull was amazing coming on as a substitution goalkeeper, but even him, he said after the game, well, Sillesen is the undisputed number one, and I'm only here to do whatever I can to help out.
Hmm.
So Sillesen will be in goal, but it will be very interesting when the match would head to penalties and see what will happen with Krull and Sillesen then.
Okay, what was the reaction back in Holland to the quarterfinals and that whole penalty shootout?
Quite mixed. I think on one hand, people were very happy to see the Netherlands being so solid in defense. And I think the whole Krill substitution thing kind of overshadowed a lot of other things in the game. In general, I think they were quite positive about the attacking side of things. And I mean, when you hit the woodwork three times in one match and don't score, you're really quite unlucky.
Okay.
I do think, and for us, it's actually a positive thing, because the match against Costa Rica was a pretty hard one. Nobody will actually jump the bandwagon and think we're already in the final. So there's no underestimation of any opponent we'll be facing. In general, yeah, I think we fancy our chances, and of course, it's very nice that we can now exercise the demons from previous World Cups by actually beating teams on penalties.
Right,
beating Spain in the first round after we lost the World Cup final against them in 2010. We lost the World Cup final of 1978 against Argentina, so that's our next demon that we can try to put to bed. And with Germany awaiting in the final, we can actually go all the way and put the 1974 final to rest as well.
Wow. Just taking care of business, Louis van Gaal style. Mikael, great stuff. Looking forward to your action on the game, and many thanks in the meantime.
Cheers, no problem. Have a good one.
Okay, Mikael Jongsma from Benefoot.net there. Well, what do you think? A lot of people would call Netherlands the more complete team thus far, and Argentina maybe a little bit more of a one-man band.
Argentina's just got, they've still got unfulfilled potential there. I mean, they're now in the semi-finals, and they haven't yet showed what anybody expected of them in this tournament. There's still teething problems in attack, and I think there's players who are kind of, you know, wandering into the space that Messi normally operates in and kind of taking away from his game somewhat. But if they do click, there's a lot more in that team, and that's, you know, what I think a lot of Argentina fans will be hoping, that they do finally see Argentina turn up and attack as they know they can do.
Mm. Do you think that's going to happen? Am I right in thinking that Di Maria is definitely out of this game, or is he in doubt?
Definitely out.
Right.
They'll miss his thrust. I mean, there's that game against Switzerland where he lost the ball, 50-odd times, and yet he kept wanting it, and in the end he scored the goal. And yeah, inevitably they'll miss him. I think one of the positive signs from their last game was Higuain finally breaking his duck, getting on the score sheet. A lot of people, yeah, pointing out that he could be possibly, yeah, Argentina's Paolo Rossi. You know, and he didn't score until his fifth game of the 1982 World Cup, and then couldn't stop. And as Greg was alluding to,
Italy, yeah, reference tick.
Yeah, tick. There was that. There is that latent potential there with Argentina. They went into this tournament with more firepower than anyone. But you know, it's, in terms of like one-on-one matchups, rather than it being Lionel Messi versus the rest of the Netherlands, it's probably going to be Lionel versus Louis. No, I mean, Louis has been the Van Gaal's been the star man for the Netherlands so far. So
I notice, Barry, that your doodle this evening is of very much the flaming sun at the heart of the Argentine flag. Is that significant as to your view on the outcome of this game?
It's a hard one to call. I mean, I genuinely don't know what way it'll go and couldn't hazard a guess. I get a bit fed up with Louis van Gaal already, through no fault of his own. There's just this veneration of him in British media already before he's even got here. He could walk out tomorrow wearing a giant pair of clown shoes and cartoon mouse ears and sit on a milking stool and people would still hail him as some sort of genius playing mind games on the Argentinians. When I think he's just a little bit eccentric. I'm not saying he's not a good manager.
If he did that tomorrow, I would hail him as a genius. Playing mind games. You're quite right.
But, I was expecting a very attritional game this evening, you know, between Brazil and Germany, low-scoring, dour needle match, and didn't quite get that. So, I don't really mind who wins tomorrow. I think I'd prefer to see Argentina in the final, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
Okay. All right. James, you got a view? Who do you think is going through?
I think it'll be an all-European final.
Really? Mm. Okay. All right. Well, Wednesday night, we'll be back after the second semi-final, so make sure you join us, listener, for that. In the meantime, it's many thanks to Barry, to Greg, to James, and producer Ben, and we'll see you tomorrow.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. With World Cup fever taking over, we at The Guardian are pretty sure that you're thinking big too. So maybe now is the time to use Squarespace to create your own professional website for your small business, portfolio, or blog. It's easy. You could create your own site during halftime. Just go to squarespace.com to start your free trial. And to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.